Well, hello there. Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. As always, we're going to start off by talking about the events that I like to throw around the country. Of course, you can go to that 401ksite.com to sign up. Next on our table, or on the plate, is the 401k National Conference at Walt Disney World Swan, March 10th to 11th. Great event, 2 days. We have Goose Gossage for the second day. We're going to pretty much soon confirm the booking of a guest on day one. Leaning towards another New York sports legend, think 1970s, early 1980s. Should be fun. We'll probably have more information about that next week. As we get closer to the event, we're getting more and more sponsors, speakers. We're going to have a fun intro. I'll be talking about the Secure Act. I think the title is going to be the Secure Act, yada, yada, yada. So you can imagine what that will be about and references about. Wealth Prime is going to be there. We're going to introduce what they're working on, something really, really interesting for the retirement plan business for anybody who's prospecting clients. They're coming out with a tool that I think is really interesting and rather earth-shattering. Our friends, the Retireholics, will be there. They'll be there to record an episode with yours truly. Should be a lot of fun. Thinking about the beer that we're going to have on the dais over there. Again, we're having a lot of speakers. Buddies at Granite Group will be there to speak about outsourcing, MEPS, 338s, that sort of thing. We're going to have a presentation from Pension Assurance dealing with quality plan audits and why that should be a concern as to who the plan auditors are. We're going to have a great event, a great presentation on marketing from Alan Gross from GTM Marketing. He should be really enlightening on what to do and what not to do when it comes to marketing. So I'm going to sit down for that one and take down notes. And of course, like I said, we're constantly adding people and, people are signing up. If you go to that 401ksite.com, you can still sign up for the event. There's a nice firm rate, which gives you five passes to the event at a discount. You can also sign up from there, go directly to the site and buy Walt Disney World tickets. I just bought mine for myself and my family. Interesting that when you go from a 4 to a 5 day pass, how the prices don't really increase that much. The prices are about 25-30% less than you normally could buy online. $275 a night is the standard room rate for the Walt Disney World Swan, which is going to be the home base for the event. Hope you can join us. It's open to TPAs and advisors. It's a unique national event. Quite different from what you've experienced in the past. There are not going to be thousands and thousands of people. You're not going to feel like you're lost in the shuffle. It's going to be more intimate, a little quirky, as they would say, something really interesting, and you're going to learn a lot. And, of course, you're going to have Goose Gossage, who, to me, it's a great thrill for me to have Goose Gossage there because, secretly, people don't know this, I am a Mets fan, but when I was a kid, probably up until 84, I was a Yankee fan. And Goose Gossage is somebody I really enjoyed as a kid growing up. First year in baseball for me, Avengers, was 1979. Goose was, of course, part of that team, part of the 78 championship team, part of the Pine Tar game, Hall of Famer. I've met him before. He's a great guy, really funny. You're really going to enjoy him, and I'm really ecstatic that we were able to nab him, thankfully. The Yankee training camp is not far from Orlando, so we're able to get Goose. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And, of course, as you know, after Walt Disney World, we're going to go back to our regional events. We're going to have a few of them this year. We're going to start off with Houston, which has been in the news lately. The Houston Astros, that is. We'll be at Minute Maid Park on April 17th, which is going to be a lot of fun. It'll be a game that night against the Angels. I'm sure the cheating thing will be a topic, whoever we're going to bring in as the athlete, you know, we won't bring, you know, I assure you at the event, I will not be banging any garbage cans, at least for not long. And of course, May the 5th, we are going to, May 8th, we are going to be in St. Louis, Busch Stadium, June the 8th, or June the 6th. I mean, Minneapolis, Target Field, part of my mumbling of the dates and screwing up on that. Go to that 401ksite.com. We'll give you further information on the dates. We're signing up, again, sponsors left and right for these events, which is great. Sponsorship interest is high. Get a lot of people already signed up for St. Louis, which is a lot of fun. So a good time is had by all at these events. You learn a thing or two, and then, you know, the experience is really interesting, and for me, who's run about a dozen of these events so far, every event's different, every experience is different, and you learn something new every day. So I'm really happy to still be hosting these. I haven't burned all my plan provider sponsors out, thankfully. So I hope as an advisor, you can attend the regional events, and as an advisor or TPA, you can attend a national event. So again, go to that 401ksite.com. For further information. Now, this week's topic is going to be something interesting in terms of, you know, really tips for plan providers in business. Just based on the experience that I have, which is scary for me to say that in September it's going to be 22 years in this business. When people talk about years, they're like, oh, you know, it felt like last week. No, it's felt like a long time. Maybe it's not 22 years, but it's certainly. You know, it certainly felt like, 15 years at least. But, you know, when you've been in business for that long, the beauty of the business is, you know, I can explain that I've seen everything. And then there are times where I haven't seen everything. And, you know, probably towards the latter, I haven't seen everything, but I've seen quite a bit. It's like when you look at your life sometimes and, you've seen the Berlin Wall fall, September 11th, you've seen two presidential elections where the popular vote winner didn't win. You've seen a lot, you know, and I've seen the Red Sox win about four World Series. So, you know, I've seen the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox win the World Series. So, it's always interesting that, you know, I've seen it quite a bit. So, I have a lot of experience, not only, you know, as an ERISA attorney, but somebody who has his own solo practice, building a business, marketing, and even, you know, I think that some of the nonsense that I get involved with is, you know, being outspoken in my community or being involved in my old synagogue. These experiences are relevant to business, so they're relevant to life. And, you know, I enjoy, you know, talking about these things because, you know, quite often, you know, plan providers who do these podcasts aren't going to talk about these things. They're just going to talk about, you know, what the law is. And rather than, you know, a lot of tips that you as plan providers could use. Number one on my list is a tip is obviously the SECURE Act is an opportunity. Any change in the retirement plan business is an opportunity. You know, whether it's consolidation in this business where, you know, certain TPAs are becoming, the 800-pound gorilla. Certain, you know, RIAs are just, you know, adding, RIA shops to be, you know, a RIA conglomerate. Or, you know, Schwab buys a TD, there's so many TD Ameritrade. There's so many, all these things are happening. You know, there's always consolidation. But consolidation is an opportunity. But let's go back to the SECURE Act. The SECURE Act is an opportunity, but it's also a caution. Because any change in the retirement plan business, it's like a commercial for a superheroes movie. Some heroes will rise and some will fall. And that can be said about any change in a plan business. Some retirement plan providers will rise and some will fall. And that goes back to something that when I first started in the business, I worked for an ERISA attorney by the name of Harvey Berman. He had a small firm that was affiliated with this TPA that Harvey owned a piece of. So while I didn't work for what was then Mobius Tech and eventually became Stevens Retirement Services, Inc., I was an employee of Berman Sussman Forsetter. But everything I learned in ERISA wasn't through, you know, taking a tax LLM degree or, you know, taking the coursework. My education was thanks to a paralegal by the name of Marge Tracy. And Marge said to me, you know, she had been around pre-ERISA. So she was there, you know, she might not have had an autographed copy of the Bible, but maybe she had an autographed copy of ERISA. She was there in the business that long. And she said something really profound to me that really impacted me. And, you know, from then on, I would still have the same similar thought. She said, you know, I was around during the Tax Reform Act of 86, and there were a lot of plan providers that couldn't adapt to a change, and that change, one of the biggest changes of the TRA 6 is essentially defined benefit plans because of the changes in the rules and the qualification rules. They were essentially mothballed for a couple of years. And Marge said, there are a lot of plan providers who just didn't survive TRA 6 and they just went out of business. And that's what I felt like when fee disclosure regulations were coming out. There were going to be a lot of plan providers who were going to thrive, especially those that were transparent way before the fee disclosure rules. And there were a lot of plan providers that were not going to survive through, you know, the implementation of fee disclosure regulations and dealing with the fallout of that. You know, how many large insurance plan providers sold their books of business and left the business because they knew they couldn't deal with, you know, a fully transparent environment? And we even still, to this day, we still see some insurance-based providers who were bigger players pre-2012 that are struggling now. They may still be in business, but they're not the, you know, not the plan providers they used to be. But you know, it's a big change, and with any change, there's opportunity. So, like for example, one of my favorite stories is I was working as a top attorney for a TPA many years ago, and at that time the Pension Protection Act came out, so it's going back to 2006. And you know, one of the big changes to me was the codification of the addition of automatic enrollment to the Internal Revenue Code. You know, prior to 2006, automatic enrollment was better known as a negative election. And the problem is because negative election was introduced through, I believe, either a revenue ruling or a notice, I forget. It wasn't part of the Internal Revenue Code. There was no fiduciary relief, so that means there was no QDIA. And so effectively, plan sponsors who added negative election did it to juice up their numbers of the NHCs, the referral rate, and then have to put in all their money in a money market account because there's no fiduciary protection. Once the PPA came along and they offered the QDIA, I really thought that this was a home run. So I worked for this producing TPA, and when the law passed, signed into law, I wrote a little email to the bosses, the powers that may be, as well as, you know, the top salesman, a buddy of mine by the name of Rich Larita, our top actuary, and I wrote that, you know, automatic enrollment is something that we should push. It's going to help the deferral rates of the plans that we work on. And more importantly, from a money standpoint, we're going to get more assets under management. This is big. We make more money. And my joke is I wrote that email in 2006, and now it's 2020. I still have not received a response to that email. Just like I still haven't received that response from that Boston University wait list for law school. I still haven't heard from them. I later went there for a tax LLM and got a tax LLM degree over there, but still to this day, I've never received that notice of whether I got in on the wait list. But, you know, that's the joke. You know, that was a change. If you would have grasped onto automatic enrollment, listen, it was a win-win. And you got to look at the changes that the Secure Act, adds to the coat. You know, I did a webinar just today with Lyle Hinball from Granite Group, and I was going through, you know, some of the Secure Act changes, and, you know, everybody's talking about MEPs and PEPs. That's great. But to me, the biggest change is, you know, the addition of part-time employees. You know, starting in 2021, we got to start counting the years in which a participant has 500 hours or more, and then, you know, they'll have to be available for the deferral component of the plan, which is a big deal. You know, more people will be able to participate. Maybe it will help the deferral rate of the NHGs. Maybe it won't. But, of course, you can always test in the 21-1. But, you know, it's something to jump on, something to identify to plan sponsors. The MEPs and PEPs, they speak for themselves. Great opportunities if you can get the assets. You know, that was part of my discussion this afternoon, concerning about MEPs and PEPs. Yeah, everybody wants to start their own MEP and PEP, but are you going to get the assets that are going to be needed to get that cost savings and make it actually work as it's supposed to? It's a big if, big and, big all. But, you know, that's something to consider. And look at, you know, all these other changes. The tax credit. You're selling a potential plan to a employer that didn't have a plan before. Well, you know, those tax credits, $5,000 over 3 years, that's a big deal. You know, using, you know, some type of automatic enrollment, you know, QACO arrangement, that's something to consider. There are just a whole host of changes. Look at the changes that Secure Act goes through. See what you can use out of there to push your business forward. Because there are other, your competitors are already doing that. You know, I've talked to, you know, a lot of the plan providers concerning PEPs. And they're planning. They're going to get to the market. 2021 is pretty damn close. You know, and you just really got to act. And you know, I always say there's two types of people, those who talk and those who do. You want to be one of those people that does instead of talks. Talking is nice, but if you can't get to the marketplace, you're going to be crowded out by those who did get there first. You know, Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, you know, always said things that come to those who wait were left there by those who got there first. So you need to be on top of the game and, you know, get on top of it. Another big thing on my hit list, dealing with plan providers, you can't change the culture of your business unless the top of that company decides to change. I think that probably in my career, I think the most frustrating time I ever had was the 2 year stint at you know, the semi prestigious law firm of Long Island, which I can now say is Myers Swazi. You know, I was an associate over there, and you know, I had ideas. I thought I could grow a book of business, start a national ERISA practice. And I started by leveraging our existing clients. We had, you know, really some, you know, well-known Long Island-based businesses that we could, you know, sell my services to. And what was interesting over there was they had this really unique system of partners making money. Now, when they advertised a job to me, I thought that this system would benefit associates, but apparently it only benefited partners. So what would happen is that if you originated the clients, if the clients came to you, and you're considered the originating attorney because you originated that business, as a law firm partner, you were entitled to 50 cents of every dollar that was brought in. So if we had an existing client, we had a well-known community bank. Well, if I sold my ERISA services, whoever brought in that business, for every buck I billed, that partner would get 50 cents. And do you know how much business I was able to cross-sell my services to one client, and that was it. The partners, for some reason or another, you know, they were all, I guess, you know, solo practitioners that had been gobbled up by the firm, or they joined up with the firm, but they handled their clients like, you know, there was a fear like I was going to steal them or or whatever it may be. And, you know, I could build a practice with our existing clientele. I would actually have to go out and get clients on my own. And, you know, I realized that no matter what I could do, I couldn't change the culture. You know, so I couldn't leverage our existing clients. Well, how do you get clients? Well, you know, I said, let me market myself by writing articles that other plan providers could use to get the clients. And then when, you know, there's an ERISA need, they're going to call me. Well, as you know, when you see my work, I produce an article a week for JD Supra that, you know, that's distributed. These are the famous two-page pieces that everybody uses. You know, we got the great one on the payroll provider TPAs that we update every year. Some other, you know, the fiduciary warranty was another favorite of mine. But I got these articles that I write every week and that plan providers and plan sponsors have used for, you know, the last 10 years. And the funny part of it was in the 2 years I was at, you know, Mara Swazi, I could only get, I think, 3 articles out. And we had a bureaucracy. It would take 6 months for an article to get approved. It had to go through the advertising committee, which was a law firm associate who didn't draw a dime of business. It had to go through this ERISA attorney who couldn't spell 401k if you spotted her, the 4, the O, the 1, and the K. She had to prove it. And then the management committee, whatever, whoever that was, they had to prove it too. So, you know, I realized that at Meyer Swazi. I realized that at my old synagogue, you know, culture can't change. You know, when you're a low person on the totem pole, you can't change a culture. Culture sets its ways. You know, they always say you can treat an old dog new tricks. Well, when it comes to culture, you really can't change it unless the top of the organization wants it to change. And it's extremely hard. You know, when I was the vice president of synagogue, I was vice president of synagogue at Rockville Center. That was dying for years and years. You know, I came in, ran some fundraisers. You know, I brought in Sal the stockbroker into my synagogue, and people enjoyed it. Brought in a lot of money from people who weren't members of the synagogue. I came up with some interesting events. Did a instead of the regular Friday night dinner where, you know, they're giving you a piece of chicken and a piece of kugel or some other ghastly piece of food, you know, I did a Chinese food night. I did a barbecue night. You know, you're always coming up with some different ideas. But the problem was you never changed culture. No matter how much I tried to make it the friendly synagogue, it wasn't a friendly place. I was surrounded by people, the very same people, the very same leadership, that had taken the organization down from 750 families to about 220. So when you're surrounded by the people who were involved in the destruction of the organization, and they're still in control, and you have the title of vice president, but you really don't know what's going on because there's a, you know, secret clique running the place, the Big Five, you know, you can't change the place. It's frustrating, but you can't change it. And as being a plan provider, it's extremely hard to change the culture of the organization. If the culture of the organization is to treat their employees poorly and good employees leave for better opportunities, it's very, very hard to change that culture. When I worked for a TPA and the guy running the place, Manny, if he was threatened by you because, you know, you were a superstar, an all-star, he tried to minimize you. He liked pushing people that were incompetent. You know, it goes back to the old Rodney Dangerfield joke in the movie Back to School. If you want to look thin, surround yourself with fat people. And Manny, to look competent, he surrounded himself with incompetent people. You know, the idea, you know, the best person gets a job, that's not really in reality. We see that with the Mets picking their manager. The best person didn't get the job. You know, the general manager, you know, Brody Van Wegman, you know, wanted to pick somebody who didn't have that much experience and couldn't, you know, that he wouldn't butt heads with. So, you know, a guy like Joe Girardi or Buck Showalter or John Gibbons doesn't get hired because the general manager is concerned about his job and, you know, doesn't want somebody that he can't either, you know, they say collaborate with, but it's more of a control thing. So, you know, dysfunction, you know, an organization can't change unless the people at the top want it to change. And even then, it's very, very difficult because you'll have people underneath that will resist change. How many years, you know, I was working at a TPA, different TPAs, different businesses, whatever it is, and somebody would come up with a new idea, and it got pushed away. When I was at the certain TPA, a buddy of mine, Tom, was hired to develop a manual, develop a process to improve administration. It was a thing of art. I mean, the book was like a thing of art. And all the administrators fought back and, you know, wasn't implemented. It really would have helped us in the long run, quality administration. But cultural place doesn't want to see that, you know, happen. And one of my favorite stories of all time, so I was working at that TPA in the city. And, you know, I had to do a lot of the work. You know, I was photocopying planned documents. I didn't have an assistant. So when it came time to doing plan amendment letters, I'd actually have to retrieve from each existing administrator and beg them for their client list because for some reason we didn't have one master client list. So I had to do a lot of legwork. And when I decided to leave and go work at this union law firm, they literally hired my replacement the day he got an interview. His name was Andy. I don't know whatever happened to him. I did know what happened to him. I don't know what happened to him today. I don't know where he is now. But Andy was talking to me, and he was saying, you know, I'm going to delegate a lot to the plan administrators. They're going to help me out. And I'm like, you know, that's not how it works here. If you are persistent even for asking for client lists, they will complain about you to Manny. So I said to myself, after a day of sitting with this Andy guy, I said, you know what? I said to my wife, he's not going to last 6 months. He was gone in four. The culture of the place, you know, wasn't going to change. And I remember when I was still at that union law firm, he's emailing me something he sent to the, you know, people running the company. And he CC'd his attorney, you know, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. You know, just making these, like, I wouldn't say they were threats. He was making demands on them that were, you know, not something you should be writing to your bosses. And I said to him, you sent me that email, and I said, be prepared that you're going to have to pack up your desk soon. And he says, oh, no, I'll be fine. I think within a week he was fired. You can't change culture unless you're at the top, and even then, it's difficult. Next on my hit list, marketing. Marketing's a really big deal for me. Without it, I'd be some kind of low-level associate somewhere, even when I'm nearing 50 years old, I guess. I don't know. But marketing is the reason you're listening now. If it wasn't for marketing, nobody would know who I was. Nobody would read my articles. You know, I'd be nothing. There would be no 401k conference. It's marketing that helped me along the lines. And I've made mistakes with marketing. I'm not perfect. You know, I certainly say too much. And, you know, that's always a problem. People don't like people who are very frank and opinionated and whatnot. But marketing is a very, very important topic. Number one, marketing obviously has to be clear, concise. It has to be in a language that people understand. So, I still do the joke where, you know, there are two types of ERISA attorneys, those who speak English and those who speak ERISA-ese, and I'm the guy who speaks English. So, you know, marketing is a really important part. It's got to be clear, concise. It's got to be in a language that the people that you're trying to talk to understand. So marketing to plan sponsors is going to be different when you're marketing to advisors or TPAs or other plan providers. Because their knowledge is a lot more. And I was successful because I broke down really difficult topics in ERISA and brought it into a language that people understand. And, you know, there's always the cultural illusion, you know, making jokes about Caddyshack, whatever it may be, and it gets people interested. You know, a spoonful of sugar will make the medicine go down, as they said in Mary Poppins. So, you know, you have to have marketing, you know, targeted to how you get clients. You know, I have, like I said, marketing to plan providers. Those are the sources of referrals for my business. You may have marketing that's directly to plan sponsors. You may have marketing directed to specific, you know, plan providers or, you know, accountants. And it's important you know, you speak on a level that they will understand. Next on my hit list, improving the participant experience. I will say that over 22 years, I always joke that the only thing that hasn't changed is the enrollment meeting. But the age of the participants are changing. You know, the millennials, you know, I always have the joke when I hear somebody's age, and I'm like, I have articles of clothing older than that kid. So, you know, these millennials did exist when I started the business in 1998. Yet I still see advisors and TPAs running enrollment meetings as if it still is 1998, and that you still can make, you can only make your investment changes over the phone. That's a joke, because when I started, we were still doing pretty much phone changes for the deferral fund changes and whatnot, and you could only get your balances through the phone. But, you know, millennials are different. Gen X, Gen Y, I don't even know these gens. Gen X, I know Gen, but not these gens. I don't know Gen X and I don't know Gen Y. I think I'm Gen X. So baby boomer millennials, you know, baby boomers today are in their 60s. Some are in their 70s. They were born after the war. Millennials today are 20-something. You can't communicate with a baby boomer and then communicate the same way with millennial. It doesn't work that way. Different generations. Multiple generations, and you just really can't do it. And you need to really think outside the box how to improve the participant experience. You know, apps are really good. Social media is really good. Paperless is pretty good. But of course, that doesn't work with, you know, people who are baby boomers or even my generation. But, you know, always think about improving the participant experience, because most plan providers don't. Of course, coming up with technological ideas, some of the greatest ideas that I've seen in the 401k plan business are on the technology side. Different apps, different websites, different tools. You know, when I met the Alford brothers 11 years ago talking about Brightscope, I thought it was a fantastic idea. Everybody thought, you know, oh, they were awful because their data on the 5500s were old. That's because that was the days before electronic filing. But they caught on. And other, you know, other benchmarking tools caught on as well. And, you know, the greatest changes in the retirement plan business are on the technological side. So look at your website. Look at what you could offer in something interesting that really, you know, sometimes, you know, bells and whistles go a long way. So it's important that you, you know, think about that. And, of course, last on my list, start thinking about other synergies with other benefits or other features. So, for example, if I'm an advisor, I'd want to talk about HSAs. Listen, I can make money on assets in HSAs. If I'm a TPA, hey, why don't I get into the HSA business? Why don't I sell other services that are close to what I do, or get into other businesses that are close to what I do? I'm not suggesting a TPA go into the payroll providing business, because we know what a disaster the payroll companies are in when they decided to go into the TPA business. But I'm saying, you know, look at benefits and features and, you know, different kind of relationships and whatnot. You know, that sort of thing. Build relationships with insurance brokerages, maybe get into the health insurance business for, you know, your particular state. There's so many different ways to, you know, get added benefits and added revenue, you know, and won't really upset the nature of your business. But, you know, there are plenty of synergies to be had. Your TPA, well, a lot of people go into the 316 business when you consider it. Like I said, HSA is a terrific consideration. Listen, I'm in the conference hosting business. So, you know, always look to different ways to expand your, you know, amount of services to tap, you know, additional revenue streams. You know, I always look at the example of Pepsi. Pepsi sold soda. Then they decided that they're going to go into the snack business. Snacks, you know, salty snacks. That, you know, helps you sell sodas. More importantly, they went into the restaurant business at one point. They had, you know, they owned Taco Bell, Pizza Hut, Long John Silver's, I think A&W at one point, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And you know, restaurants are a great way to sell Pepsi. So look to other avenues, other revenue streams, other alliances that could derive you more income, which could certainly help you make more money, but maybe even be more competitive on pricing. And then, of course, adding bells and whistles. You know, like I said, a lot of technological ideas that you could expand on and further increase revenue by looking towards ancillary services. You know, I've done that in my business, you know, being a 316, hosting events, you know, that sort of thing. And you're always looking to, you know, easy ways to expand your footprint in the business. That's what it's all about. So I hope that you enjoyed this episode of That 401k Podcast. Please go to that401ksite.com for further information on that 401k conference, that 401k national conference. And I hope to hear from you guys next week. Same podcast, same Ari Rosebaum. Take care. Bye.